The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on October 28, 1991 in Atlanta, Georgia. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 10, Verse 31 through 35.
Translation. Narada Muni continued, O King Yudhisthira, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is not visible to an ordinary human being, spoke in this way instructing Lord Brahma. Then being worshipped by Brahma, the Lord disappeared from that place. No purport. Text 32. Tada sampuja sirasa bhavante parameshtinam bhavan prajapating devam prarato bhagavata kalaha. Prahlad Maharaj then worshipped and offered prayers to all the demigods such as Brahma, Shiva, and the Prajapatis, who are all parts of the Lord. Tataka vyadi bhi sartham muni bhi kamalasana daityanam dhanavanam cha praradham akarot patim. Thereafter, along with Sukra Acharya and other great saints, Lord Brahma, whose seat is on a lotus flower, made Prahlad the king of all the demons and giants in the universe. Purport. By the grace of Lord Nrsimhadeva, Prahlad Maharaj became a greater king than his father Hiranyakashipu. Prahlad's inauguration was performed by Lord Brahma in the presence of other saintly persons and demigods. Pratinandhya tato deva pradyuccha paramasishaha Swadhara Swadhamani Yu Rajan Brahmadya Pratipuchitaha. O King Yudhisthira, after all the demigods headed by Lord Brahma were properly worshipped by Prahlad Maharaj, they offered Prahlad their utmost benedictions and then returned to their respective abodes. Evam cha parshadau Vishnu Putratvam Prapitau Dite Piristhitena Harina Vaira Bhavena Tau Hatau. Thus the two associates of Lord Vishnu, who had become Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, the sons of Diti, were both killed. By illusion they had thought that the Supreme Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart, was their enemy. Report. The discourse concerning Lord Nrsimhadeva and Prahlad Maharaj began when Maharaj Yudhisthira asked Narada Muni how Sisupala had merged into the body of Krishna. Sisupala and Dantavakra were the same Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu. Here Narada Muni is relating how in their three different births the associates of Lord Vishnu were killed by Lord Vishnu himself. First they were the demons Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation and purport to text 31 through 35 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 10, canto 7. So, Jai Vijay, who are the gatekeepers, remember in the heavenly planets, in the Vaikuntha planet, had stopped the four Kumaras from entering, and it was in the previous canto, sixth canto. So now for over one canto, this continuation of them. That one question, how when they were cursed, oh no, that was a good watch for it. Anyway, now there was a question about it, about Dantavakra and Sisupal. So it's the same Jai Vijay, taken birth three times. If you recall, they were cursed by the four Kumaras to take birth as demons. And Lord Vishnu offered them an alternative, that's three births as a demon, fighting with the Lord and being killed by the Lord, or seven births as devotees. So they chose the first option. So due to the illusion, when they take their birth, they are automatically inimical to the Lord. Here, the Lord had warned Brahmadev not to give such benedictions to the demons, to the envious. It is dangerous to give benedictions to demons who are by nature ferocious and jealous. If a demon gets special powers, then instead of using it for the upliftment of others, they use it to persecute, torture, control others for their own personal pleasure. And Ravana, he got also supernatural powers from Lord Shiva. Then he also created a lot of disturbance, and he arrested all of the demigods and put them on the steps to his throne. So every day he'd walk on their backs up to his throne just to show that he was so powerful. Indra, Vayu, Asadar, and all the different devas were there. I don't know. So then Narada Muni, someone said, well, why are you stepping on their back? That's not so painful as if you were to step on their stomach walking up. He thought, yes, that's even better. So he turned them over and had them all lying on their back looking up. And he would step on their stomach as he walked to his throne. What happened was that because all the devas are in charge of the district, different astrological signs, because they were frozen on their stomach, but they couldn't look at Ravan. But now that they are put on their back, they're all looking and completely cursing him, you know, wishing him all misfortune and everything, you know, completely finishing, you know. So that was a special deal to reduce his good fortune very, very quickly. So the point is that when they get power, they misuse it. This is a problem of that. Unless people are God conscious, unless they're devotees, if they get weapons of destruction, if they get any very powerful weapon, they by nature would not hesitate to use it, even if it meant the suffering of so many other people. Just like it was seen that for some, they get so worked up for some political purpose that even like in the assassination of the Prime Minister of India, Rajiv Gandhi, the lady sacrificed her own life. She tied the plastic explosive on her back, bent down to touch his feet, and then blew herself up and blew the Prime Minister up. And they tried to catch the mastermind of the whole plot, and then when they surrounded his house, he and five other people, they ate cyanide pills, and he shot himself in the head, and everybody else chewed cyanide pills and killed themselves. When they broke in the house, they were already dead in a circle holding their hands. So it's like they're so wrapped up in what they're doing that even they kill themselves, they sacrifice their life. But then they also, without hesitation, they kill so many people. So you can see that kind of zero option. What do they call it? The system for protecting against nuclear attack was thought that, well, you may blow us up, but we'll wipe you out too. So that was mutual assured destruction, mad. So, but if you have a really mad person, they could care less. And I'm sure there's some people in the Middle East that if they had, they could care, even if it was a trade-off for them, it would be worth it to destroy the demon America, whatever. So you get different people with different kind of ideas. And this is not something new, this is something from the time immemorial. So even Krishna is saying, don't give a ferocious, violent, cruel, demoniac person some special powers. So that goes for all time. So Krishna, he's more selective. If some demon worships him and wants to get special power, he doesn't mechanically have to give. He uses his discretion. But generally the other devas, they tend to, especially Lord Shiva, tends to give very easily without considering the pros and cons. Brahma was supposed to consider the pros and cons, but he didn't. He also was very impressed by the austerity of Hiranyakashipu, so he surrendered to those austerities. But then Hiranyakashipu misused them. So Vishnu is warning, Narasimha is warning that don't give this type of benediction to the demonic people. It was just like Diti. She later became very angry that her sons were killed. Out of attachment, she thought that this is all a trick by Indra. Indra has arranged it to kill my two beloved sons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Those sweet two boys. So I should arrange to kill Indra. So for 1 year she served her husband real sweetly. Always smiling, never a harsh word, always giving everything, you know, serving just to the everything really clean, really nice food stuff offer. Everything just like completely serving without, you know, never a discouraging word could be heard. Everything, you know, really. So he became so impressed by the devotion of his wife. He thought that, oh, she's such a sincere, humble, dedicated wife. I should give her some benediction. Of course, he was a very powerful yogi, so he could give special benediction. So then he said, well, you have served so nicely, I'd like to give you whatever you want. Just tell me what you'd like to have. Once he said this word, he said, are you sure you'll give me whatever I want? These were the magic words he was waiting for. He said, yes. All right. What I want is a son who'll be the enemy of Indra. Meaning that she wanted a son who could kill Indra. And then he said, oh, how did this happen? How did I... Here I thought this lotus-faced, beautiful princess who's been serving so nicely with all smile, how has she done this to me? After all this nice service, and then what does she ask for is to kill her own nephew. She wants a son who can kill her own nephew. So he was really shocked. She could have made this diabolical plot the whole time. But then he was careful. He didn't just give immediately what she wanted. He thought for a minute and said, now how can I get out of this? I give her my word. I had to give her what I promised. At the same time, I should do it in my most intelligent way so that it will turn out all right. So then he told her to do that, what's called the Payobrata, for 1 year worshipping Vishnu. And it's very intricate ritual, which has got countless slip-up points. But if you do it, he said, if you do it perfectly, then you can have a son who will be the enemy of Indra. You can kill Indra, but if you mess up, then you'll have a son who will be a friend of Indra. So then Indra, when he realized what was happening, then he came and he started serving his auntie like a menial servant. And he was just waiting when she's going to slip up. And at the end, he was getting the ninth inning. He was getting really worried because she hadn't slipped up. It was already so many months over, just at the very end of the period. So he was trying to think how he could also make it a little difficult for her, maybe make a little like fog or something, anything. So anyway, finally, she did mess up. She drank water with two hands, so only supposed to drink with the right hand. Immediately, she made some other mistake. Then so immediately he came and cut up her children and the womb. But they were crying out, hey, we're your friends, don't kill her. Because they immediately became his friend as soon as she messed up. And then, instead of one, they became, how many, 49 or something? Nine, I forget. 49. So, Tamaruts. So in this way, they get benediction, but Kasyapa was a little more careful to give a benediction in such a way that there was a chance to change the whole situation. So sometimes even the very highly placed persons, they get wrapped up in anger and enviousness and revenge. And in the previous time, there were people who were specifically demons and people who were more saintly. And sometimes even the saintly people got angry and wanted revenge. But the demons were always ready to do whatever they had to do to control. They didn't have many qualms. Any qualms for that matter. They'd do anything that would serve the purpose. So, in this age of Kali, we had a situation where in us we have both divine and demoniac natures. Nobody is born so pure that they're free from all kind of demoniac nature. Usually like the devas, so much in the mode of goodness. Still, there may be a little tinge. But in this age, people have both kind of weakness. They have some good tendencies, some bad tendencies. Some people are more bad and some people are more good. But it's hard to find someone who's predominantly, exceedingly one quality. Because people are not of such elevated character in any one particular concentration. So it's very difficult to preach in the Kali Yuga because the people do have a certain nature to want to reject Krishna consciousness for the slightest reason. To become envious or angry against others for the slightest reason. They're not so intelligent, so the demoniac nature can take over. So normally people might think of something like that, but then they'll use their discretion, use their intelligence and control that demoniac thought. In the age of Kali, people are notably weak in being able to resist this type of influence. So what does Lord Chaitanya recommend is that we should be Janata Bhisunichena. We should be more humble than a blade of grass in the street. We should be so humble that Prabhupada explains, we don't feel any kind of resentment. This resentment is a reflection of a demonic nature, resenting the different situations that may occur. And the blade of grass, if sitting in the sun, getting the hot sun, sometimes somebody's walking on the blade of grass, Prabhupada explains that the grass doesn't protest. So don't step on me. If someone steps, they step and the blade of grass bends over later on and comes back up again. Similarly, the tree is so tolerant. People sit under the tree and take shelter of the tree, but then whenever they want, they just go and chop off the branches of the tree. So the tree doesn't protest, even though people act so cruelly sometimes with the trees, bulldozing them over and so on. So Lord Chaitanya, we have to be, in this Kali Yuga, that tolerant. Because we have this nature that can easily flare up and become envious, can become resentful, become bitter. If we're not completely humble, someone may come up to us and mistreat us, call us a dirty name. Sometimes it's outside people. It doesn't hurt the heart so much because they're people we don't really have a relationship with. If someone who we have some form of relationship with or some other devotee criticizes us, it hurts because some relationship. So these things are from a near and dear one take a greater effect. The devotee, however, can overcome this by just being super humble, super tolerant. Straw humble and tree tolerant. That requires a certain degree of focus on the objective of being Krishna conscious and not letting anything take it away from us. We can see how the demons, to achieve their ends, they're very determined. Hiranyakashipu did incredible austerities. Ravana did amazing austerity. Even Diti had tremendous determination to achieve her objective. She got purified by the devotional service for 1 year, so in the end she was happy anyway. That's the point. If we tolerate our urge to be resentful, to be envious, to be angry, only use that not against Krishna but for Krishna, then by practicing devotional service, eventually our mood will change. We won't maintain that bitterness. We shouldn't maintain it. But sometimes devotees fall into this kind of a demoniac influence where they start to judge different devotees and according to ethnic groupings or according to their various kind of superficial circumstances and neglect to see any good qualities in the devotees. Simply speak bad about one or another or some other devotee. And this way, instead of using their time to glorify Krishna, they use it to criticize other devotees, which at best is a waste of time and at worst might even be a Vaishnava aparad. As Prabhupada said, we don't hate the diseased, we hate the disease. We're trying to cure the disease in different people. Whoever comes here to the temple to render devotional service, it's understood they're going to have defects. Nobody is going to be 100% pure. The point is that they should be willing to take the treatment to cure themselves. As long as they're taking the treatment, then there's a good hope they can be quickly cured. So this is very important that we exercise this control over our consciousness. Otherwise, we'll find ourselves being sapped, drained of spiritual consciousness. Prahlad is the personification of tolerance. He was tortured so many different ways, but he always tolerated. So he was so highly respected. Brahma and other devas, they personally performed the abhishek. When a king is installed in the Vedic culture, then there's an abhishek performed of the king. He's like, you install a deity, you install a king, that he is installed with the duty of representing Krishna for protecting the citizens. Just as God is protecting everyone, he's supposed to protect the citizens. If he doesn't, then he has to suffer karmas. If he protects the citizens properly, engages them in God-conscious activities, then he gets 1/6 of the good karmas or 1/6 of the bad karmas. So just like when people get married, their karmas are merged. That time, whatever the wife does, the husband has to take bad karmas if she does bad things. If she encourages the husband to do good things, she gets 50% of the good karmas. That's a material viewpoint. Krishna consciousness is transcendental, so you get full benefit if you encourage someone to be Krishna conscious. So here the king, when he's installed, that means he's wedded with his praja. In a sense, he's connected now with the praja. All the people of his kingdom, whatever they do, he gets a reaction, good or bad. So if the majority of people are good, then he ends up with a plus. If the majority are bad, then he's in trouble. So if a person, if a king is a little God conscious and he understands that he's actually connected with his citizens like that, the tendency would be that he would be a lot more motivated to try to protect them and try to create a very good rapport with them and try to engage them in good activities where they would be gradually improving in their God consciousness, because he's got a very vested interest. We heard that the people playing in the World Series baseball game, and whoever the winning team is, each player gets 100,000. If they lose, they get 15 or 19 or something. It's not only just a game, but they have, they got some immediate, they can get a lot of money if they win. Also, it's not just like that. They're professional players. They're not playing for just love of the thing. Playing for the money also. So in the law of karma, people in a responsible position, they also have to pay in terms of hard karma. Or they get rewarded in terms of punya. And anyway, they're going to get the reaction. So they, naturally, if they're a little conscious, they will take they're very serious. Of course, the demonic kings, they can care less about karma. They're atheistic and they can do so many things. They're writing on their previous good karma and they finish off quick. They go as long as their previous karmas are going, and then when it's all over, then they finish. It's amazing. In some third world countries, you see somebody's like a big president or dictator, and all of a sudden, what? It's like, you know, he's arrested or he's shot. And okay, new one. It's like, you know, his bank balance of karma was finished, and okay, then immediately time to go to Yamaraj and pay the debt. In the law of karma, you get your good karmas first, and when that's finished, then all the bad karmas are waiting for you to pay. So we got enough bad karmas piled up there, and when the positive bank balance is finished, and they just, Yamaraj is waiting to help them pay back the debt. You have special debtor colonies there for bad karma. So here, this is such an auspicious occasion. I mean, normally a king is just installed by some Brahmins, and they chant some mantras, and have a big ceremony, invite the leading citizens. But here you have such a major occasion, you have Lord Brahma. I mean, there's very few kings are personally installed by the number one Brahmin of the whole universe, Lord Brahma. And they gave, just like maybe Prithu Maharaj, who had a very amazing installation, a coronation. And then here Prahlad, there's very few that have that kind of coronation. So this is Prahlad, he doesn't have any particular desire, but he's instructed by Narsingadev to take up this role. So he's doing it. The devotee, if they get some material facility, they don't throw it away. They don't. If Krishna is giving it spontaneously, then they may accept it and use it for Krishna. That's Krishna's desire. Prabhupada was upset that sometimes, or he mentioned that it was not proper, not very appropriate that somebody works hard their whole life amassing a certain fortune, a certain capital, and then they decide they want to surrender to God, so just before surrender they give it all away to their materialistic relatives and then go to Krishna empty-handed. So their whole life, all the work they did just went for some material purpose, and other people use it for their sense gratification. I'd rather there's a formula there where you give part to the relatives, part you keep for emergency, and the part you give for Krishna. His devotees, the preaching. Things should be done according to the ratios given by the previous acharyas. So everything has got a certain instruction, a certain status, how it is supposed to be done, whether a person's a king, or whether they're a woman, or whether they're a gihasta, or whether they're a conditioned soul in the age of Kali. There's guidelines given in the Vedas. Under the guidance of a spiritual master, a bona fide spiritual master, we can see what is the thing we're doing at a particular time. The biggest danger for devotees is to somehow or another stop chanting, stop rendering devotional service. And Lord Chaitanya says that in order to do Kirtaniya Sadahari, in order to chant Hare Krishna all the time without stopping, you have to be more humble than a blade of grass. You had to be more tolerant than a tree. You had to be ready to offer respect to others and not expect any respect for yourself. It's very rare that even if you see someone is a rascal and you call them, you're a rascal, then they just get angry. Doesn't solve the problem. Sometimes in some material situation, Americans try to just become angry and aggressive, and occasionally it works. But in terms of preaching, where ultimately a person has to voluntarily accept what we say. See, in a business relationship, someone may not like it, but then if he has his own vested interest, then they may swallow their pride. But when you're preaching, and it's not a question that a person's obligated to accept what you're saying because of some vested, you know, it's their own higher interest, but they don't, not, it's not their immediate prayas, material interest. It was just like recently there was some article about somebody that somehow he lost $400 somehow due to the mess up of some company he was working with. some company that he bought something from, but because he was supplying as a bank. Bank gave him 4 counterfeit $100 bills. He went to the next place, and then they said it's counterfeit money. Went back to the bank, said, how can you prove that it was our money? You might have got it from somewhere else. So in this way, he happened to be providing checks for the bank. He was a check printer, so if he made a big stink about it and sued the bank, then he'll lose the job. So he said, what can I do? It looks like I'm out $400. So here's the person. It's not like he's happy or... But he just had to swallow the loss because he doesn't want to lose the ongoing business he's getting with the person. So a lot of times, maybe you go to an airline or something and they mess up your reservation and you get angry and this and that. And because they want to keep your business, so they just, you know, they swallow it. But when you're preaching, you don't have that kind of a hold on someone. If you go to someone and start becoming angry with or... You know, you're fallen, you're a rascal, you're committing sin, this, that, something. They just may get turned off. And it's not come back anymore. Or what? It's like somebody said yesterday that people take the Krishna banks and different things to donate for the temple. But sometimes they forget to bring it here to the temple. Some say they have actually full banks, completely filled with coins and money, but they forget to bring it to the temple. And it's like when the mortgage bill comes, it's like they are looking for you. You have to pay, otherwise they'll foreclose your house. But giving to Krishna, it's like you don't get your house foreclosed on. So they forget to bring it to the temple unless somebody comes by and picks it up. Maybe it just sits there. So that, in a similar kind of way that... In this material world, Krishna has arranged it that if we don't eat, if you don't sleep, if you don't pay your rent, so on, you suffer materially. The whole suffering, of course, in the larger sense, is because we're in the material world, and if we serve Krishna, we would leave this material world. But that requires someone to be very God-conscious to understand that reality. So the devotees, knowing that people are by nature foolish, by nature they're fallen, by nature they're not God-conscious, so by nature, they may not, very few people will spontaneously come forward and you know, follow up on their pledges. They need to be encouraged. They need to be reminded. And if that's not done in a positive way, they may also become angry and say, well, I don't have to give you this. So many other religious institutions or there's so many other churches or temples. So Lord Chaitanya's system was then to be very humble. To praise the other people. Oh, you're such a nice gentleman. You're so sincere. You're so generous. You're so... And this way, if you tell, well, you're a real rascal, nonsense, you know, you're a miser, the person said, well, bug off. Get out of here. Tough luck, you know. They get angry, impatient, they won't give. But if you're very kind and nice in the preaching, then they may be encouraged, yes. I'm nice, I'm generous. All right, I'll give you something. Sometimes it means, no, I'm not nice, I'm not generous, I'm all right, I'm... But in general, that's the preaching, is that one has to be very tolerant. People come up and abuse the devotees. They do so many things. But the devotee doesn't... they defend themselves if it's a question of physical injury, but otherwise just... Things, verbal abuse and things they had to tolerate. In America now they're talking about abusing women in the workplace. They don't have any idea what abuse the Hare Krishnas have to go through to sell books sometimes. The number of... You're surprised at, you know, the number of people that sometimes have such a vocabulary that never goes beyond four-letter words. But there are many nice people, and there are many people that are open to receiving Krishna's mercy. And the devotee has to be very controlled. This is the sense control. To be controlled, to be humble, to be patient, to be tolerant. to know that these people are really suffering due to the material laws of nature, and that the devotees had to be so much in control of their own faculties that they can cut through the other person's mode of ignorance and passion and bring out the little spark of goodness in them and engage them in Krishna's service. Prahlad, he was offenseless. But his father was completely impatient, demonic by nature, so he couldn't tolerate anything. It wasn't completely what he wanted to hear. There may be a few representatives of Hiranyakashipu and Amanut Sen, but generally people have both in nature. They're not like so predominantly demonic. Very few might be. Those people we avoid. So you avoid the demonic, you preach to the innocent people. So if there's an innocent person, rather than agitate their lower nature, you try to address their higher nature, try to inspire them to engage in Krishna service. Lord Chaitanya was so expert when he met the sannyasis led by Prakashananda Saraswati. If he came in and said, well, look, you're all Mayavadi impersonalist, Mayavadi hoi Krishna aparadis, you're all offenders of Krishna, I am a pure Vaishnava, I have bhakti yoga knowledge, I can smash all of you people, something like that, I would have been a non-starter. But instead, although these all are true, completely correct statements about Mayavadis, and a lot of them were already spoken by Lord Chaitanya to his confidential devotees, but when Lord Chaitanya went there, he just took a very humble position where they had all washed their feet, he sat right in the dirty foot water. He said, what are you doing sitting over there? That's a dirty place. He said, no, you're all great sannyasis. Very, I'm of a lower category, so I'm just sitting here. How can I go and sit amongst all of you? Then they said, no, what is this? Why you're being so humble? You come here and sit with us. So immediately they were, obviously there was some anger before that because they're always criticizing Lord Chaitanya, but he approached so humbly that it was very hard to find anything wrong with Lord Chaitanya when he was being so humble. So that's the expert nature of Lord Chaitanya's preaching. And basically in America, we are in that situation where people, Prabhupada said, there's a very predominant tendency to be angry on many people. The number of vegetarians is not so great. So we had to do from our side the best possible thing to create in them a positive impression. And in our own spiritual life, in our dealings with other devotees, we had to also be very careful not to fall into the demoniac kind of a nature. We have important works to do. We have important things to achieve. In our devotional service, we had to achieve the goals. But if we are very tactless in our dealings, then we can simply create disturbance. If we become priya, these are the kind of things we have to avoid. Both examples are given in the Vedas, the demoniac and the divine. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, there are two kinds of persons, the divine and the demoniac. So we are supposed to avoid the demoniac nature and to take the divine nature. First thing is become a devotee, and then that makes it very easy. Without being a devotee, no one can get permanent good qualities. So devotee appreciates anything done for Krishna, because Krishna is our worshipable object. Krishna is our Lord, He's our life and soul. Lord Nitya, our life and soul. Anyone who's doing anything for Krishna, that's appreciated. You see how people, they accept some material thing and become very attached to it. Right? Just like in these sports thing, people become so attached to a particular team just because it's in there. Just due to some illusory kind of superficial, frivolous attachment. To the point that people, they start crying if their team loses or is not winning. They become angry and frustrated. And if they win, they become completely intoxicated. When I was in June, I was in Chile, and the day after I left Chile, the Chilean football team won the South American Cup. The people became so happy. They had big festivals in the street, champagne for everyone, drinking, dancing. You know, we won the first time they ever won. And 8 people were killed because of drunken driving and knifings. And 400 people were put in the hospital. This was the victory celebration. Because, of course, it's in the mode of passion and ignorance. And they, but they get so much into, they get so much worked up over something, you know, what does it matter? Who remembers, you know, 3 years ago or 10 years ago? You have to look up and see that who won what doesn't have any permanent value at all. But people get so much worked up over something. So Maya is very expert at creating very subtle and so gross kind of attachments for things which don't have any real value at all. So we're trying to break people's attachment from these illusions and let them awaken their natural attachment for Krishna. But even those people in their illusories, anyone who's helping, you know, everybody who scores a point or does something, you know, every team, you know, team fan that become like intimate friends, you know, because they're fans for the main team. These are all perverted reflections. But actually, the devotees are supposed to be very close to each other. They're supposed to be intimate brothers, sisters, because they're all serving the same Lord. They all have the same objective. They have the same purpose is to see that Krishna's interest is promoted. And anyone who's dedicated to that, anyone who's on the same team, you know, whoever they may be, then we're brothers. But Maya is very expert, it's Kali Yuga, to create any reason to create division. Age of quarrel. Division between husband and wife, division between God brothers and God sisters, division between, you know, spiritual organization. There's always, this is the divide and rule tactic which Kali is always using. And when we are not humble and tolerant, when we become resentful and angry and we allow ourselves to fall into the material mode of ignorance and passion, any little thing becomes a reason for distracting us from the real business, which is focusing all our energy and promoting Krishna consciousness. If we do that, then where's the difficulty and progressing? But because we don't do that, and we become involved in many other different types of personal relationships which are not at all based on Krishna consciousness. Even if you don't personally like someone's personality, but if you see that the person is doing something for Krishna, just on that basis, he's worthy of respect, worthy of being offered obeisance, we're worthy of giving our affection, our love, appreciation. So in the spiritual world, this kind of rivalry in a negative sense is completely absent. There may be a competition, like Krishna is playing with the cowherd boys, they're playing different kinds of sports, they're rooting for each side, then whoever the winning side, what's the punishment or what's the... They had to carry the victors on their shoulders. So if you lose to Krishna, you have to carry Krishna on your shoulders. If you win, then Krishna has to carry you. So everything is transcendental. Winning or losing, it's all the same. It's all connected with Krishna. So there's no desire to harm or hurt. Everything is very chivalrous. Very much filled with love. The devotee gets to carry Krishna. He's in complete bliss. Carrying Krishna, he loves Krishna. So there is a transcendental competition. Someone does better, then say, oh, you've done very nicely. You're serving Krishna so sincerely. You produced these nice results. And I would also like to learn from you and do something nice for Krishna. The whole purpose is that Krishna is pleased. It's not the material. Not that by pulling down another person that will help me to go up. Rather, even if I can help another person, that will help me to go up. At least if I don't harm another person, their progress, and I can do something, that's all right. So in the sports, a lot of time there's a lot of cheating. people in the bicycle races, they have to go in the packs of four, because if you're alone, and then they catch you alone on the stretch, they'll put something in the spokes of your tires or push you off the road, dump you off a ravine or something. These are very famous, so they always have to go in groups of four and block the other people, because it's all dirty. Cutthroat. Whatever it takes to win. That's the material world. And that's why Prabhupada said that this place is no place for a gentleman or a gentlewoman, because it's cutthroat. Because the demonic nature will inspire someone to do anything to win, even violent, vicious, horrible things. So that type of attitude has to be very systematically eradicated from the society of devotees. It should be just like in all kinds of sports, there's rules of the game. And then if you break the rule, then there's the umpire says foul, right? Blows the whistle. Different sports have different, you know, for fouls with different penalties. You can get thrown out of the game. If you commit too big an offense against a Vaishnava, you get thrown out of the game. Krishna takes away the mercy, back to zero. If it's a little fouls, little offenses, you get a little bit covered up, you're set back. So we don't have like an umpire that, we have the umpire, Krishna is the umpire ultimately, and he's deciding. But we have to be our own kind of judges, and we have to take the judgment from the guru and the senior devotees. We have to, as soon as somebody does something which is not Krishna conscious, we should be fouled. So even if somebody hears someone else criticizing another devotee, or and doesn't protest it, doesn't walk away, they're also implicated. One person making a foul, it gets compounded. If anybody refers to another Vaishnava as being of a particular ethnic group in a derogatory way, not just like a descriptive way, just like, you know, how to distinguish one devotee from, in terms of like when you go in to recognize them in the crowd or something. But if it's done as a derogatory way, well, oh, he's a gringo devotee, or he's a yank, or he's a Bengali, or he's a this or that or something, in a derogatory sense, it's an aparat. It's a hellish mentality. So Sarup Damodar, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, they were born in Bengal. We don't consider them Bengali, you know, but the devotee followers of Sarup Damodar are called Bengali devotees. So there's great pure devotees. Bhakti Chuhu Maharaj is also born in Bengal. So many, Srila Prabhupada was born in Bengal. We see devotees are transcendental. There may be other rascals. There may be rascals who are born in Bengal or rascals who are born in America. It doesn't mean all American devotees are rascals or all Bengali devotees are rascals. Or we shouldn't ever go down to that level in our discussions. There may be some devotees for a particular period of time may be lazy, but if we say that all the devotees are lazy, everybody in the ashram is a lazy bum. There's only three devotees who are sincere. That means if there's a fourth devotee in the temple that's sincere, that we're guilty of Vaishnava Aparad. So any kind of generalization, any kind of ethnic slurs, any kind of falling into tamagun is hellish. And it's so easy to fall into it because all around it's all pervasive in the material world. But that's what everybody expects, that people who are the ashramites, who are living in the ashram, they're going to be exemplary, they're going to be free from these defects. And we better be. Otherwise, how we can live together as a community? How can we live together? We're not like the Hiranyakashipu and his band of demons who are all together because they just want to exploit people. We're here together because we want to do something for Krishna. Many times I've heard the comment made, well, I wouldn't be with you, just like I was like from a particular background, maybe some other devotee was from another background. So sometimes you hear the comment that, well, I would never be together with you if it was a material situation. We don't have the same interest. We don't have the same material interests or material personality. But as devotees, we were together. Because we're all trying to serve Prabhupada. We're all trying to serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That is why Prabhupada called ISKCON the United Nations of the Spiritual World. In Mayapur, you have a PLO commando sitting next to an Israeli, sitting next to an American, sitting next to another a Chinese, all taking Mahaprasadam together in the Mayapur, considering each other brothers. You go to Israel, it is very, very bodily conscious. You go to the Middle East. When I visit Israel and I have to fly to the Middle East, I had to take off all the stickers that show that I went to Israel. So if I would land in the Middle East with a sticker that indicated that they had to give me double luggage tags, so that I'd switch the luggage tags when I got to Athens and was flying to the Middle East. Because they knew that if anywhere would indicate that I was, that when they gave me a reissued ticket, they had to blur the ticket stamp that didn't show that it was in Tel Aviv that it was issued, because if I landed, I could be persecuted because I had gone to Israel. So devotees are transcendental to this kind of situation. One devotee from Nairobi was preaching in Bangladesh with us, and he was telling all the people that he visited South Africa, 10 years ago. And of all the institutions in the whole South Africa, the only institution that had the Afrikaners, the blacks, the Indians, the coloreds, all the different ethnic groups, all together in the same temple. There wasn't another, not even a church, there wasn't anywhere that was so open to let everybody in the same institution completely freely. This is our claim to fame, that we are completely above body consciousness. But we had to religiously guard this heritage that Lord Chaitanya gave us. Vaishnava jati bhuti nahi. No caste consciousness. We judge each person individually. If a number of individuals have similar defects and they're from the same ethnic background, well, that's maybe a coincidence, maybe it's a trait, but anyway, everyone is individual. It's not mean that everybody can't lump everybody in. Women have got their weaknesses, men have got their weaknesses. We have to rather go against those. We have to conquer over those weaknesses. The scriptures are telling what are the weaknesses of women, not to slur women, but to warn women, these are your weaknesses, now transcend them. It says, what are the weaknesses of men? To warn men, these are your weaknesses, now you transcend them. Because the devotee is supposed to be transcendental to the bodily consciousness. Prabhu, I am not this body. That we have to act on the spiritual level. Our relationship is we are all devotees. Vasudeva Kutumbakam. We are all serving Krishna. And we want the whole world to be united like that. We want to show people it works. Everybody says universal brotherhood. But in practice, people are not able to associate like that and cross over the... And materially, it's very difficult for people to get together on that kind of level. They're trying busing people in from one neighborhood to the other. It has limited success. The Krishna consciousness we are able to achieve because we have a philosophy. But to make it work, we had to practice it. So that was what the difference was with Prahlad. He had a philosophy and he practiced it. And therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, it says that what is the secret for victory? Krishna says, a victory, I am morality. If we follow our spiritual ethics, if we follow our principles given to us by Srila Prabhupada, that's the highest morality. And that will always produce victory. Victory by cheating is very temporary. The next time you'll get exposed and it will fail. But victory by morality, by following the principles given to us by Guru, by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that is giving us permanent victory. So, just like it takes two to tango, it takes two hands to clap. There's a saying that one hand can never make a clapping sound. You have to take two. Whenever there's disagreements, it always takes two people. One person is so super humble. Just like Lord Chaitanya put himself in such a situation that even Prakashananda Sar wanted to pick a fight. He couldn't find, he couldn't get a grip, couldn't get a handle. Lord Chaitanya was too humble. So he slipped out of any... didn't give any reason for them to be agitated. So we have to all be so expert like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu not to create any reason for people to be agitated. And if somebody has a hellish mentality, that's their own karma. Why should we come down to the same level? So Prabhupada really wanted that this society would show that universal brotherhood but on a spiritual platform. And to make it work, we have to all be Krishna conscious. we have to all be very careful. Just like now, every time the politicians say something, they got millions of media people there with tape recorders. And sometimes somebody makes an off-the-mark ethnic slur, and then somebody tapes it. Next thing, it's on the headlines. Senator so-and-so said this, or President Truman said that. Somebody. So there's a lot of pressure, although they probably have all kinds of racial prejudices and everything. But because they're in the public eye, they have to be very careful. We may not have a number of media people trying to record everything we say, but we have the devas watching everything we're doing. We have Yamaraj hearing everything we say. We have Vishnu, Krishna in our heart, watching everything we're doing. They're all keeping score. When do we say something that's not Krishna conscious? When do we say something that's not helpful for someone else's Krishna consciousness? When something that's just material? If we want to get back to Godhead in this lifetime, we have to watch every word we speak, every thought we think, every action we do. They just got the newspapers to watch out. We have Krishna monitoring every thought we're making and seeing that are we ready to go back to Godhead? Or do we need to spin around a few more births to get purified? Maybe take birth in another ethnic family, transcend our attachments, or whatever it may be. Whatever we think of at the time of death, what if we die thinking of something? We only want to think about Krishna. Somebody dies thinking of being envious of some other ethnic group, and he's thinking of that ethnic group, they take birth in that group. That's karma. So all these kind of childish things, which we consider childish in terms of the great philosophy of Krishna consciousness, they have to be very meticulously avoided. And we have to promote, actually, how to be real better brothers and sisters, better uncles and nephews or whatever, to better family members, so that we actually, the bond between us with Krishna in the center is enhanced. It'll naturally be enhanced if we're Krishna conscious. Material friendship means you rub my back and I'll rub your back. But a real friend in Krishna consciousness sees that someone's off, he may say, Prabhu, I'm very concerned. Like the story I told about the tiger, the villager warned the pandit, watch out, you're going to go in the forest, there's a tiger, they may eat you. That's real friendship. That's all right, you want to go in the forest, have a good time. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Hare. Any question?
If we can understand that a demon would only be performing some kind of austerity or a benediction that he could do harm with, then how is it a Lord Rama would be compelled to give a benediction to a demon that had performed some austerity? And are we supposed to have some way to judge a demon's motives?
Even if a demon apparently has good motives, because they're demoniac, they're not in control of their senses. It's not that atheistic people necessarily don't have good material qualities. They may sometimes have very good qualities. It's just like the scientists who are, you know, inventing some of the person Nobel that invented dynamite for different reasons, but it was used by, he felt guilty because it was used for destruction. The rulers or the government at that time said, no, we just want a better dynamite for, you know, making tunnels and things. But then, you know, once they got it, they used it for making better weapons. Then he realized he was a kind of a peaceful person. Then he realized that they had exploited him. So sometimes people may say so many things, but when they get the facility of their demons, they'll use it for anything they do. And they may use it for things which are actually destructive to society. So that's why I said that even if a non-devotee has good qualities, in the end it doesn't count, because they can ultimately misuse those qualities. Even someone may be good, have good intention, but he can misuse the so-called good intention, but actually he's in error, he's mistaken. He doesn't really know what's good. The terrorist who sacrificed their life to kill other people, they think that they're doing something for a very good cause, for their people, for their independence, for their political freedom, for against the tyranny, against the satanic Americans, or against this or that, or whatever. You know, they create some kind of illusory good cause, and they do horrible things for that. So the problem is, if someone doesn't have a higher intelligence, then even though they may have a so-called good intention, the intention itself, because they're an illusion, may actually be completely false, completely bogus. And actually it's harmful for everyone. So a devotee is supposed to have a greater objective vision, see the overview of things by having understanding of the absolute truth, seeing what is actually absolutely good. The people who have invented better ways of having abortion are doing it so that, you know, for the good intentions, but ultimately still kids are being killed. They don't believe that life begins from conception. They think it's a chemical reaction that happens 6 weeks after somewhere there, how the baby is growing up to that point. So they don't see these things, and they give their theories, and some people believe it. So many people have good intentions, but the problem is, if they don't have any spiritual knowledge, they may be doing something which is completely harmful. That's why we want to make people God conscious. We want to give them spiritual knowledge so they can have the discrimination to know what is good and what's bad. If a person is completely without any transcendental knowledge, without any spiritual knowledge, then they don't know, they're not there to a certain degree, they're insane. To a certain degree, they lack the rationale. Now that's why when we are preaching in such a high elevated platform, and then if we don't act at least in the mode of goodness, if we don't act up to the standard of the ethics that they can understand, then they'll think that one of these people, they're criminals, or they won't believe us at all. So Prabhupada wanted that the devotees should act very ethically, not to steal, not to lie. There may be some extreme circumstance, you know, where there could be some exception for Krishna, but frivolously to do it, or whimsically, or to do it as a habit, is very, very detrimental. The people want, Prabhupada wanted that the people would really respect the Hare Krishnas for being charitable, upright, honest, good citizens. And due to the mischief of a few, some people they don't have that idea right now, and we have to work to change that. So now the North American leaders, temple presidents and GBCs and other leaders, they're trying to do a campaign that devotees very meticulously don't do anything which would attract that type of misunderstanding. To do some positive activities like prasad distribution and public relations campaigns and things, and be very careful not to do things which would be unethical. But actually, their ethics sometimes get distorted because of lack of spiritual knowledge. Devotees' ethics are not only a mode of goodness, but they're even higher. Just like we say that we shouldn't unnecessarily cause violence, everyone will agree, but then they all think that it's all right to kill animals to feed human beings, even when there's enough vegetarian food around, because they don't consider that animals have souls, so it's all right to kill them. They can just plug their ears when the animals scream out and say that it's not a real scream, it doesn't exist. So in order for us to implant higher ethics where people will see that the animal scream should also not have to be unnecessarily caused, we had to establish ourselves in their eyes. At least we have as good ethics as they do in terms of honesty, straightforwardness, morality. Right? But even though they have this other basic ethics, they may, in the end, they ruin the whole thing because of lack of spiritual knowledge. Any other question?
One of the loving exchanges between devotees is revealing your mind to him. Revealing your mind to him is sometimes revealing your mind to you. So, where do we draw the line that devotee is sincerely revealing their mind, but what they're revealing is seems to be critical of other devotees? You know, they're really disturbed that other devotees have done this to them, or this to someone else, or to the group. But actually, it feels very intimidating to even hear it. same time try and engage in this loving reciprocation.
Was that the intention of Rupa Goswami, that revealing the mind means emptying out the garbage truck on the other person's backyard? Point of revealing the mind, it's a pair, revealing and accepting the other person's. We have the humility that if we have a lot of anger or resentment or negative feelings in our mind, that we should be embarrassed about that. We should want to know how to get rid of it. We shouldn't be proud of our garbage, proud of our dirty laundry, and then want to like kind of somehow justify that. It's not a real revelation of the mind. Unless if I'm willing to accept if I say someone reveals their mind to the Guru that I'm having this doubt or I have this feeling, and the Guru says that it's Maya, you should see it in this way. If we can accept, the Guru is also opening his mind, or accept from a God brother, a God sister, if they give us an opinion which is not the same as ours, and they back it up by Sadhu, Shastra, and Guru. If we're close to hearing anything else, then it's not really that kind of reciprocation that's mentioned, the dinati, pratigrinati, you know, giving and the taking, you know, that I'm opening my garbage on your lawn, but then if you say, well, look at this is garbage, and this really should be thrown in the garbage dump and not kept in your mind anymore. Then we said, then we don't want to, no, we just want to go around the stupid garbage everywhere and not let anyone else help us to throw it away into the garbage can, then what's the use? Some people, then they remain in that kind of a rut, and in the name of revealing the mind, but they're not willing to also accept someone else's understanding of that, then it's not really a two-way reciprocation. It's just an excuse for us to talk about the things we don't like. Because the point, if it's a real, we may see something, oh, Prabhu, it's not exactly like that. Look at him, you have to also see it like this under certain circumstances. And, oh, Prabhu, but no. Then it's just, you know, it's just a normal kind of material discussion where I got my idea and I tell it to you, and if you agree with it, then we're friends, and if you don't agree with it, then I get angry and just keep on saying what I want to say. And that's what, you know, it's just a normal kind of material one-way road. But for the Vaishnavas, of course, the real thing is to get above. That's like a real low level of reciprocation. Usually we don't want to tell our problems to a peer. Usually you go to a stronger devotee with your problems and try to get the stronger devotee to advise us. Usually amongst equals we try to just give kind of favorable association. And if a person's a somewhat junior, for sure you wouldn't tell your problems to a junior devotee, because you didn't want to overload a junior devotee. He's got enough of their own problems. You see, this is a thing, like, the more you take responsibility for other people's spiritual life, the more you have to take the garbage from their minds. But then the reciprocation is because if they're approaching with that type of respect, that they have to also, they're supposed to take your guidance in how to clean that mess up. So a peer devotee may not be the proper person to really reveal all that kind of mentality, because they may not have that wisdom in order to advise how to overcome that. Instead, what may happen is they just get overloaded. Normally, like Prabhupada's, like the sun can dry up a dirty place. We take dirty water in the sunlight and it gets dried up. We don't, you know, there's no use of dumping, you know, trying to purify something if it's overcast rainy day or if it's not that powerful a sun. So we have to be also a little bit discriminative to who we reveal our mind to what extent. If we've got really strong attitude problems in terms of our commitment to Krishna consciousness, in terms of our appreciation of devotees, and if someone starts to overload things, you feel, well, it's too much for me. I mean, what they're revealing to me, maybe they're doing it with all good intention, but actually it's more than what I can handle. I'm not going to be able to help them because it's like too heavy what they're feeling. Then you might just say, Prabhu, you know, actually, maybe you should talk to some more senior devotee because the things you're feeling are really heavy and, you know, I'm just a simple devotee. I don't really have the potency to kind of advise you, but it seems to me very heavy that you should really see someone that could help you to get a better perspective on what you're feeling because it doesn't look very favorable for your Krishna consciousness. And if they're sincere, you should talk to your guru, you should talk to the senior sannyasi or this devotee or this senior, you know, maybe they'll be more able to help you. You can also bow out if you think a person is starting to like, really bring out a lot of very negative things which are more than what a person can handle. This way, kind of very politely protect your consciousness from being overloaded. I know there was a time in ISKCON where maybe even senior devotees would tell much, you know, more innocent kind of junior devotees many heavy things about other leaders and other places and things that were on their mind. And then maybe they were so committed to Krishna consciousness, they were kept on serving and they were just thinking, you know, that we have to solve the problem. But another junior devotee who was just trying to gradually build up his devotional creeper and the roots are not so deep in his faith in Krishna consciousness, when he hears all of a sudden all kind of heavy rumors or discussions, sometimes it just is too much. They overload and they lose their determination, they lose their faith. Prabhupada said faith is a very delicate thing. So we have to protect our own faith and we have to be careful not to fry the faith of other people. It's like a pot, a ceramic pot. If you break it, it's very hard, you can't put it back together the same way anymore. It's always going to be those little crack lines. So we want to build up people's faith. And ultimately, like Rupa Goswami or others, they reveal their mind. They don't have a lot of dirt in their mind. They're revealing the sweet realization, how wonderful was this kirtan, or how nice were these devotees, how nice is this festival. And, you know, maybe sometime there's also other things that they have to reveal, doubts they have. But then we have to be a little selective of who we open our mind to what degree, whether they'll be able to take it. So there's this different relationships. We may reveal things to the guru that we won't reveal to other godmothers. Because we know that the guru I have to reveal, he's the one that is responsible to help me. Maybe I have so much faith in a senior devotee that I'll reveal, but just to reveal everything to everybody, is that the intention of Rupa Goswami? For a Madhyam Adhikari or Kanishtha Adhikari, that's not recommended. To give unfavorable association to devotees who are not... who are peers or innocent people. That would only be admissible if you're going to the guru to get some kind of, or see a senior devotee to take some spiritual guidance for our purification. Is that clear?